unlocking the road ahead. Automotive digital forensic. Well, times have long passed that a car or any vehicle is just something that has mechanical parts in it and does its job. Nowadays, there is a lot of microchips in those vehicles, and Kevin Gomez from the Technical University of Ingolstadt, he's a postdoc over there, is going to present us what's going on there. He's going to give us a deep dive into this field. Kevin?
Yeah, thank you very much for having me today. So as we already talked about or heard about, today we are going to talk about vehicles and specifically automotive digital forensics. So how we are going to investigate, in the case of an accident, for example, modern vehicles. So if we think about modern vehicles, we think about cars that are connected to something. So cars that communicate with other cars, cars that are connected to the traffic light infrastructure, to our smartphones, and many more. Modern cars also have like self-driving features, so they keep you in the lane, adaptive cruise control, or like the autopilot from Tesla and other vehicles that allow you to just sit there, look around, and hope that the car does not crash. We also have a lot of different features and services. You can connect your smartphone, you fully integrate your smartphone into modern vehicles. You can connect your smart home to the modern vehicle, to the infrastructure. And the car then is part of the Internet of Things environment. So it's part of the IoT environment. So you can look it up in different search engines. You can find out stuff what ports are, for example, and services are open within the car and so on. But when we think about it realistically, what cars are even evolved in state-of-the-art investigations, and that's not modern cars, because the average age of a vehicle on the road is not 3 weeks for the fully functional or fully fancy modern cars. The age, for example, or the average age for vehicles in the US is around 12 years, in Germany around 10 years, and in China around 5 years. This means that we cannot rely on the fancy stuff and the increased processing capabilities these modern vehicles have right now. In modern vehicles, we have to deal with something like this. So this is a Volkswagen Golf from 2013, so it's approximately 10 years old. We have a pretty classical infotainment system. This is what you can see on the top right picture. There's no real smartphone integration here. You usually have a hard drive within the infotainment system where navigation maps are stored and sometimes other information. But we do not have like dedicated storage mechanisms in such vehicles. We also have limited advanced driving features. So you might have adaptive cruise control or lane assistance, but nothing really more. The such vehicles from around this age also work with distributed architectures in the car. This means that you have a lot of different small computers, and in a car, a computer is called an ECU, that communicate with each other, and each small computer, so each ECU, has its own functionality. So you don't have like very big processing capability units, like the Tesla, for example, has, as a dedicated centralized architecture. All functions, all services are distributed within a modern car. Or not a modern car, within an older car. So when we then think about what new vehicles are currently introducing, we think about more fancy stuff, as I indicated at the beginning. So smart home integration. So your vehicle is connected to your home. So you drive into the pathway of your home, and the garage doors, for example, opening automatically, or the heat already turns up when you are 20 kilometers ahead of arriving at home. You have keyless go, so you don't need to physically unlock and lock the car. You just get into the car with a classical key or sometimes even with the smartphone. You have smartphone integration, so you fully integrate your smartphone and everything you have with a smartphone into the car. So you can see who is calling you, You can speak with the car and indirectly speak with your smartphone. You can use your music on your smartphone to play it within the car. And you have a lot of advanced driving assistance systems, which we also will look into in this presentation. So what does this mean with older vehicles that are investigating and vehicles that are part of or modern vehicles for automotive digital forensic investigations? And what is even an automotive digital forensic investigation? So automotive digital forensic investigations, or automotive digital forensics, is a subdiscipline of classical computer forensics or forensics computing. So here we mainly focus on investigating in-vehicle components and components or entities from the vehicle ecosystem. So they are connected to the car, but can be considered as external units. Examples for this is traffic light systems, smartphones, or the IoT as we've seen before. We currently separate two different use cases when we look at cars: accident reconstruction and crime-related investigations. When we look at accident reconstruction, we're focusing on proving a fault, so a fault by the driver or a fault by the manufacturer. And another option here is showing guilt, again of the driver or of the car. In this case, it's usually the manufacturer, but they are very good at telling people that it's not their fault, it's the fault of the car and of somewhere else. When it comes to crime-related investigations, we look at either the case that the vehicle is attacked directly, so examples are cybersecurity-related investigations, or the vehicle is used as an asset in a criminal action, so for example, in a robbery. All right, but before we continue, we should take a step back. So why is automotive digital forensics even something special? Why we should consider it? Well, we have multiple users for vehicles compared to classical IT systems. So we have the driver, we have the owner, we have the registered user, we have the insurance contact, we have the passengers, we have many more people. Each of those individuals leave traces with the car or the ecosystem. So for example, within the infotainment system, within the comfort system, if the comfort system, for example, automatically detects that another key is coming, and then the seat is positioned in the correct seat position. And we have all our own driving or personal driving behavior that is already collected by some of the insurance companies. Vehicles are massively networked, so they are connected to backend services, cellular infrastructure, and the traffic light systems. The components are further interconnected within the vehicle itself. So the result is that we have evidence at a big variety of different locations. So locations within the car, but also locations that are external. Because in a classical investigation, you cannot go to every traffic light system the vehicle passed through and try to collect this data afterwards here. Vehicles are cyber-physical systems. This means that they interact with the environment, and through this, they have safety implications. So that's pretty known, I guess, because there's a lot of safety focus on vehicles right now, because we have to protect, or the vehicles have to ensure that the passenger and the environment does not get harmed. We have a lot of dependencies between components. So multiple ECUs require data and functionality from other components. In development, you usually use a HIL, a hardware in a loop setup, to plug in your device you want to test into a semi-simulated environment. And here you have the capability to not need a car in order a fully functional car that is driving to test your features. HILs, or hardware in a loop setups, are also used by forensic investigators to collect data from such components. We have also functional data, as I indicated before. This is mainly the fact, due to a lot of regulations and standards in the safety realm, that we focus on collecting this data or storing this data in a modern vehicle, so such as the driver safety belt or the temperature of the engine itself. We have a lot of safety implications, which are the result of the functional data, obviously. So or live investigations, like we would do this in our classical IT systems, are not very feasible because we need to ensure safety of the passenger and the environment, obviously. So Accessibility is the last point, and this is also a pretty big problem because the car is usually with the owner. Shipping a car is very hard, and we also do not always know which components are where within a specific vehicle from a dedicated manufacturer. So we have to perform a lot of reverse engineering, looking up blog posts, looking up previous investigations on how on identifying where this component is within a car, for example. So overall, the characteristics are not unique to automotive digital forensics. They have cross-correlation and cross-connections to other domains in digital forensics, obviously. But the mixture of all makes automotive digital forensics very special in the domain on its own in digital forensic science. So how would you investigate a modern vehicle? Currently, there are two tools that you can use, BerlaIVE for infotainment systems and CDR or EDR tools like the Bosch CDR tool for event data recorders, usually airbag systems. BerlaIVE is only available for military dedicated legal entities or specific legal entities and selected private entities. So you can not buy it as a researcher or as a private person and identify what data is stored within your infotainment system. We can further utilize embedded forensic techniques to collect the data from a component, but this usually leaves us with the analysis problem and the interpretation problem of the data, where we can then use proprietary development tools or third-party tooling, where we again have to rely on the trustworthiness of the tool's provider to actually give us the data and the correct representation of the data of the device we collected the data from. So for example, let's look at the Tesla autopilot investigation that we performed. So in this case, a Tesla vehicle crashed into a tree. The driver then claimed that it was not their fault, that Tesla accelerated on its own and crashed the vehicle into the tree. The insurance company was not very sure how to prove or disprove that it was actually the manufacturer's problem, and Tesla obviously have stated that it's not the problem of the Tesla vehicle. So the insurance company wanted us to get additional insight on the autopilot's functions and the forensic capabilities of the autopilot. So we identified the storage unit, we collected this data, the files and folders and this corresponding metadata, and stored the knowledge in a dedicated knowledge representation for us to use it again in future investigations. So for this, we first received the autopilot, we identified the storage component, and in this case it's a eMMC. We performed a chip-off on this device, then we used a classical eMMC reader that we know from mobile forensics. We identified that the data stored is a Squash FS and it's not encrypted, which we were pretty lucky. We performed metadata analysis, collected the logs, and quickly identified that's a weird device, that's a very weird setup. However, it's pretty protected, but they're not really storing a lot of data on the component. They are pumping everything into the cloud. So automotive digital forensic investigations should be no problem now, right? So we just do things to evidence items, collect them and find out things, and we are fine, right? But it's sadly not that straightforward in such investigations because state-of-the-art automotive digital forensic investigations are very rarely in-depth due to the massive time consumption that we have to deal with. In very rare occasions, we get the opportunity to look into our component. We have a lack of available tools where we don't know what the tools are actually doing. We need to trust the manufacturers here. Vehicles introduce a lot of manufacturer specific. So you have a standardized data format, and then you have a very big range on quote unquote manufacturer specific. So the manufacturer can do whatever he or she wants in the device itself. So that's a big problem in, again, data interpretation. So each investigation that we have to deal with is an individual one, which makes it very hard and time-consuming and highly complex when we look at modern vehicles. So this was identified by academia as a problem, and in academia we love to solve problems, and sometimes we love to generate a lot of new problems. So people are looking into 5 different research areas, from pretty specific ones with in-depth investigations to more general one with fundamental research. So individual investigations would be in-depth analysis, so only an investigation on the Tesla autopilot, like I've shown before. Then also the development of additional components, so data loggers, black boxes that we know from avionics, and backend streaming applications. Process development on how we approach a car, so how would you again or also combine physical and digital evidence. General investigation methods, so how can we utilize standardized interfaces like the diagnostic interface to collect data. And fundamental research to just generate an understanding of the domain and what is actually happening within a car. So besides the research efforts, we can further identify changes in the automotive industry. While the European OEMs utilize resources in lobbying against electrical vehicles and for alternatives or combustion engines, OEMs from other regions take them over through actually functional software-defined vehicles, where the European vehicle OEMs are having a hard time to deal with. So the manufacturer have again identified the problem that the cars are too complex and no one gets what the car is actually doing. They also are required to handle privacy aspects by law, and now they even have to look at security and cybersecurity stuff also again by law. So what a shame, bad lobbying, I would say. So to handle the complexity, the OEMs now switch to centralized architectures. So architectures where not every ECU is responsible for a dedicated functionality and has a lot of connection interfaces. Everything is centralized to be connected with more dedicated processing capability units like gateways and a telematics control system. So here this allows us to collect data only from one specific component and generate a picture of what actually happened within a car. OEMs to further introduce a lot of additional features. So like modern cars sometimes even have biometric authentication, so we can identify personal identifier information about a specific individual. Also comes to vehicle personalization, that we can identify what music usually a specific individual listens to. We have features on demand, where we again can identify personal preferences by each individual, and we can already sense a bit that the privacy impact that modern vehicles have is pretty substantial and pretty big. The OEMs are now also collaborating with IT companies because they identified, well, IT is not that easy. We can build cars, but we are not very good when it comes to bringing IT into cars. So for example, Huawei is working together with Cerus to sell their cars in the stores, and Porsche announced that they are, well, in the future cars will have Apple CarPlay in their vehicles, so you can fully integrate your Apple smartphone into your Porsche car, if you have a Porsche car. Then the OEMs are now making automotive digital forensics a cloud problem. So for example, the Volkswagen Group now works together with Microsoft to integrate their vehicles fully into the Microsoft cloud. This involves not only the car manufacturer in investigation, it also involves the cloud provider, where we need to rely on data that we get from the cloud provider. So where do we currently head? So it serves us with various opportunities, but also a lot of challenges in this domain. So vehicles are valuable and important for investigations, but due to the complexity, automotive digital forensic investigations are highly complex. So this leads to jailbreaking vehicles, and we will have a talk right after this one, where Niklas and Chris will show us how they looked into a Tesla car, a Tesla vehicle. We will have vehicle ecosystem forensics in the future. We will have more structured knowledge reuse because that's a very big problem in this domain. And we in general need to generate an understanding of the tool's capabilities and also the capabilities of the vehicles, specifically when it comes to privacy. So the current path leads us to additional services and features, which will open up a lot of attack surface, which we as researchers will definitely benefit from, but people as vehicle owners will definitely not benefit from. More data also leads that the data is scattered around everywhere, at the OEMs, at the cloud providers, at third-party infrastructures, where they now need to deal with things. And I specifically say things here because you get quickly the feeling that each entity that collects data from the vehicle is not really aware of what data is they actually collected. And for this, the Mozilla Foundation looked into the privacy aspects of modern vehicles. They identified on 25 different brands that they quoted that cars are a privacy nightmare. They identified that, for example, cars collect data like songs you play, where you drive, how fast you drive, even genetic information, your sexual preferences, so pretty obvious stuff, I would say, that you would expect that your car sends to a third-party environment. And due to the increased complexity, security pitfalls do also arise. And some examples is that the vehicle is now part of the Internet of Things. So we have a lot of potential entry points for attackers. The extreme complexity in vehicles introduce a lot of software bugs and vulnerabilities. European OEMs currently rely a lot of security by obscurity, but this will change in the future when they centralize everything and utilize classical IT hardware and software. This is why, for example, currently there's a lot of research in the Tesla region, because it's just a classical IT system with wheels and it does stuff. We also have the problem that OEMs are still not able to patch all the components on vehicles. That's not that easy, and there are also discussions on how long they should provide updates and even security patches for the vehicles. Keyless go systems can ease the theft. You can identify or quickly Google up some hardware devices which you can buy, and then you can open up a lot of different vehicles that introduce keyless go functionality. And as we already indicated, modern vehicles collect and transmit a vast amount of data, so raising concerns about privacy and security also. And manufacturers here need to implement transparent data policies and robust security measures to protect this sensitive information. Many vehicles use components from various suppliers, so the supply chain is pretty complex and big in the automotive industry. So if one third-party component has a security vulnerability, there probably are different manufacturers are affected and different models are affected here. So we've learned that vehicles are important and valuable for forensic investigations and specifically for event reconstruction. But they are pretty complex when it comes to an investigation here. We can utilize a lot of different evidence sources for cross-validation of evidence, but also to check if evidence from different sources is actually trustworthy. The current evolution of the automotive industry moves towards software-based vehicles that holds a lot of challenges and opportunities for forensic investigations, but also a lot of dangers when it comes to the privacy impact that cars have on each of us as an individual. We still lack a lot of fundamental research in automotive digital forensics, and specifically in automotive privacy and automotive security. But we will see that, or we are currently seeing that the digital forensic capabilities of vehicles coming up right now and are part of investigations at this time will further increase in the future. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Kevin. We have, of course, now a good portion of time for questions. You might line up at the microphones. And while you do so, we're going to pose the first question from the internet. Is there anything? Well, doesn't look like. So basically, we go to microphone number 4, it is. Number 4, there's a question for microphone number 4.
Want it?
Could you please leave the room a little bit more silently? Thanks.
Is the mic on? Yeah. Can you briefly talk about the boundary protocols between the vehicle and the cloud? Is it KNFD piped over WebSockets? Is it kind of all over the place? And is there a standard on the horizon?
It's all over the place, but usually it's classical cellular cellular-based communication, so 3G, 5G. Sometimes it comes down to how far you want to communicate, Wi-Fi or Bluetooth. And there are some standards, specifically when it comes to the communication between vehicles with car-to-car communication. But as I indicated before, the standard defines a lot of different stuff, but leaves the room open for a lot of manufacturer specifics, which makes the investigation, again, pretty hard, because we have to reverse and hope to find out what the manufacturers are doing.
Well, thanks so much.
Yeah, welcome.
All right. More questions here. Number 1, microphone number 1, please.
Hello. I was wondering, how can you do forensics if car manufacturers send all their data into the cloud? They can just say, oh, we didn't have anything. I mean, Tesla crashes, and then they say, oh, no, it's we don't have any data.
Yeah, that's a very
legal minefield.
That's a very good point, because that was the goal behind the Tesla investigation, because Tesla claimed, well, everything is fine on our side, trust me. And here it comes down to the investigation of the in-vehicle components. So rely on that some parts or some information is stored in form of logs within the vehicle that we can prove for this specific device or for this specific vehicle that Tesla, for example, did log that the autopilot was running while the crash was happening. So each investigation is an individual one, but you usually rely a lot on proprietary data, on embedded forensic techniques like the chip-off, and hope that the device is not encrypted. In our case, it was not encrypted, so you can identify the data afterwards. Yeah.
So Tesla will delete the logs in the future and encrypt their hardware, their file system.
I don't think that they will delete the logs, but the autopilot currently is encrypted, and we will hear this in the next presentation where they opened up the device and do not have to deal with the encryption anymore. Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks. Next one is microphone number 3, please.
Hi. Thanks. Yeah, my question goes into the same direction, actually. So I was wondering if I, for example, would own a Tesla, those log data, if those get into the cloud, wouldn't I have a right, at least in EU, to ask the manufacturers to release those data to me?
Yeah, you have.
Okay, and then I could provide them to you to do forensics on them, right?
You can, yeah.
Okay, thanks.
That's one research domain where I'm a researcher in at the University of Münster is looking into. So he's looking into the smartphone apps that are connected to the car and what data you can collect here based on the legal requirements that the OEMs have to fulfill. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. And the next one is on microphone number 2 over there in the back.
Hello. I assume you are familiar with UN Regulation 156.
Yeah.
What is your observation in general? How do the automotives try to implement or architect? I mean, this is only one regulation, but there is a guideline coming with the ISO. But there is this ISO, if you read it, it's not really solving the key problems. So what is your observation and how does it affect forensics?
Yeah. So I have not seen any effect on forensics yet based on the regulations. The only effect I was aware of is that, for example, Porsche is not building the new Macan due to because they cannot fulfill the regulations. But different research have shown, and we see this in regular investigations, that I at least get the feeling that OEMs tend to use standardization as an inspiration on how something can be done. And you can rely to some extent that data should be in a specific format or should be available in the cloud or in the car. But this is heavily this heavily depends on the car, on the manufacturing year, if they need to follow the standardization. And but I've not seen any impact here yet, to be honest. But the current path is just pump everything into the cloud and do your magic there. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Do we have any questions from the outset, from the internet?
Yes, there are some.
Please.
First off, can you firewall the data leaving the car? And is it even legal to go one step further and remove the modem or any signaling or networking from your car?
So to answer the first question, yeah, this is already done in vehicle firewalls, so that specific data is not transmitted between different components. And yes, you can, I guess you can remove the modem from your car, but you can just buy an old car that has no communication with an with the third party infrastructure. And for example, for pretty advanced cars like the Tesla, you can basically not utilize any functionality or a lot of functionality of the car if you do not agree on the big RGBs they have, that they are allowed to collect specific data from your car.
Okay, any more questions from the internet? Let's be fair to those who are not attending the session here.
Yeah, that's a fitting follow-up question. How old does the car need to be to avoid this data collection?
Yeah. That's a question I cannot really precisely answer. I would say around 10 years, maybe 7 or 8 years, that's a good point where everything around the communication with the backend systems have started. So for example, I have a car that is, I think, 7 or 6 years old, and it has functionality that is pretty convenient, but does not communicate with any backends.
Thanks. I think there is definitely room for one more question from the inside. Number one, microphone, please.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for your talk. And I was wondering if you investigated anything other than Tesla, because to my knowledge, distributed networking is something of the past. Of today, we have the domain.
Yep.
Architecture, next upcoming the zone architecture, not really a centralized as you say it, it's more a little bit different. Yep. And to my knowledge, most of car manufacturers except Tesla doesn't send anything or not too much to the cloud because of cost reasons.
Yes, we looked also at Toyota, for example, at Mazda, at Volkswagen, where we have seen similar behavior. But as you indicated correctly, Tesla is the most prominent example when it comes to fully software and cloud-based vehicles. But newer vehicles from other manufacturers go a similar way. And as you indicated, you have a mixture of the hybrid architectures, where you have centralized and decentralized, somewhat mixed with zone architectures or domain architectures, as you indicated. But it goes in a similar way. And the Mozilla Foundation report indicates also that, at least for the 25 brands they investigated in, that there's a lot of communication with the backend systems. Yeah.
So just to remark, Mozilla just investigated the privacy policies, not actual cars.
Yeah, that's true, but you can see that the privacy policies are somewhat related to what the cars from other investigations that we've seen communicate actually with the backend systems. Yeah, but there's very little research, as I indicated at the end of the presentation, in this domain where we currently need to look in to not fully rely on the privacy policies and hoping that not a lot of data is communicated due to costs, due to regulations. So as a private, as the private civil society, we need to rely on investigations and research in this domain, yeah.
Okay, thanks everybody for the questions. There are still some people at the microphone. I just invite you to come over. It's easy for you, not for those from the internet, to have a chat, a private chat with Kevin. Kevin, thank you a lot, very much for your talk. Applause, please.